Welcome to Spirits Podcast, a boozy dive into mythology, legends, and folklore. Every week we pour a drink and learn about a new story from around the world. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Julia.
And this is episode 202, the 50 scariest urban legends from each state. Julia, sometimes making this podcast with you is like I was searching the internet and just like scrolling my timeline, looking for like an article, you know, or a listicle or like something that I would really enjoy that I would see and be like, oh my God, did they write this for me? But you do it every week. And this is absolutely how this episode felt.
Oh, Amanda, thank you. It was such a fun thing to like explore all of the different states and the different options there. And getting to pick really was kind of difficult. When it came down to, okay, well, this state has five really good urban legends. How do I figure out which one to tell? But I feel like I chose ones that are both creepy, but also on brand for us.
Absolutely. And if you know of a great urban legend from a state that we didn't cover here, write in and tell it to us. We can use it in one of our upcoming Your Urban Legend episodes.
I know. I love when people send in their urban legends, especially when it's like personal to them and they have experience with it. I think we made a call to action about one in particular from Chicago that I'm hoping someone will write about.
Absolutely. And I know, Julia, that Lucy, Rachel, Livy, Chris, Sabine, and Liz, our newest patrons, would write in the moment they hear a great urban legend.
Oh, absolutely, because our patrons are the best.
They are the best. We also want to thank our supporting producer-level patrons, Philip, Alicia, Allison, Deborah, Hannah, Jen, Jessica, Keegan, Nieselkins, Landon, Megan, Megan Linger, Megan Moon, Molly, Neil, Nikki, Phil Fresh, Polly, Riley, Sarah, and Skyla, as well as our legend-level patrons, Audra, Chelsea, Drew, Eden, Francis, Jack Marie, Lada, Mark, Morgan, Necrofancy, and Beat Me Up Scotty.
Every one of you, I hope, gets to experience an urban legend firsthand, if that is your wish.
Absolutely. Maybe you don't want to, but maybe you do.
I get that, you know, experiencing the creepy stuff is much different than hearing about the creepy stuff. But I know there's some of our listeners out there who like to experience creepy things. So if that is your wish, I hope it happens to you.
Absolutely.
Now, Amanda, what have you been watching, listening to, reading that also might be a creepy recommendation for our listeners?
This is more like in the way that the real world is often creepy, but in a way that is also fun and not demoralizing, which is a hard line to toe these days. I would like to recommend the podcast Scam Goddess, which is a fantastic podcast all about scams and scammers. It's wonderful. The host has guests like Trixie Mattel and various people you might know and love from like podcasting and also comedy, recommended to me by Tracy Clayton, who is the co-host of Multitude's newest show, My 90s Playlist. We made it in partnership with Sony Music, and Tracy and Akoto Aforiata are the co-hosts. They are so fantastic. They're so funny. They're so good. So I wanted to recommend both My 90s Playlist, but also Scam Goddess, because Scam Goddess is like hundreds of episodes to listen to. And My 90s Playlist just started yesterday. So go subscribe to it.
Amanda, I want to listen to it right now. What's the first song about?
The first playlist song that we added was No Scrubs, because you have to start a 90s playlist with No Scrubs.
Of course.
It's fantastic. We talk about 90s fashion, 90s pop culture, the you know influences that these songs have had on music since. And we talk to like academics and experts and songwriters about these hits of the 90s. So subscribe now and you will see the wonderful songs that we continue to add to our playlist over the course of season one.
Also, I know it's not my turn for a recommendation, but I know people are going to ask if we're watching The Haunting of Bly Manor. Yes, we are.
I also just watched Deaf You on Netflix, which is absolutely fantastic. It's messy college drama at Gallaudet University. It's so good.
Very cool.
And finally, the last thing we want to tell you about is our live show that's coming up. Go to spiritspodcast.com/live to get your tickets now. It's only $12 to our digital live show happening on October 28th. Every ticket also comes with a replay of the stream. So whether you want to join us live, watch it later, or both, it's all included in the one ticket price. Spiritspodcast.com/live.
It's going to be the perfect ending to Spooky Month. You want to get tickets to this.
Yeah, we thought about doing it on actual Halloween, but then we're like, no, people might have things that, are, you know, they're doing. But several days before Halloween is the perfect time to be like, hey, let's sit down and watch an hour and a half of Spirits, please.
I love it.
All right, without further ado, happy middle of October, and please enjoy Spirits Podcast episode 202, 50 scariest urban legends from each state.
Amanda, it is now, as we talk right now, it is the dawn of Spooky Month.
Oh, heck yeah, Julia. Happy October.
Happy October. This is not our first episode in October, but it is our first recording in October. And that's important to me.
That's true. Well, I'm sure I told you last week, but today in the real world in the past, happy spooky and birthday month.
Thank you. And as both a birthday gift to me, thank you for reminding me, and also the fact that we deserve to celebrate spookiness, in my opinion. So what I've done today is I have done quite a lift for me, I would say. I have gone and I have found the 50 spookiest urban legends from each of the United States of America.
You mean the spookiest urban legend from each of these United States?
Yes. Ones that we haven't done on the show before, because there's a couple where I was like, well, we've done this already, but here's another spooky tale from that state.
What a fun appetizer sampler platter.
Yes, I'm here. It is a 24-hour diner in the middle of an abandoned highway, and we are going to eat some mozzarella sticks and potato skins that are spooky urban legends.
Yeah, we're going to eat this fairy food, Julia, because after 5 years of having spirits as a project we're doing, I think we deserve it.
So this is going to be a hefty episode. Are you ready? Buckle in. Get a cocktail. Take a sip.
I'm so ready. Hell yeah.
And we're going to do these in alphabetical order because it's just easier to track that way.
Amazing.
So Amanda, as we full well know here on Spirits Podcast, children are inherently creepy. So Huntsville, Alabama's Dead Children's Playground is obviously going to top their list of creepy urban legends.
Uh-oh.
The playground butts up against the Maple Hill Cemetery, and many who pass it by have reported seeing the swings move on their own.
Okay.
The stories say that it is the children that were buried in the cemetery playing in the playground, but other versions say that following several abductions in the 1960s, the bodies of several children were found under the playground and now haunt it to this day.
Dark.
Dark. I will try to content warning some of these because I think some of them are particularly dark, but I will let people know in advance what the things are. And make sure you check the show notes because we always list all of the content warnings there in the episodes. Now, many lists that I saw mentioned the Kushtaka, which one of our listeners told us about in a Urban Legends episode a while back. But I want to tell you about the Kennecott Copper Mine near McCarthy, Alaska.
Ooh.
When it first opened at the turn of the century, it brought wealth to the town. However, like many mines, it was eventually abandoned as the mine became inaccessible due to the movement of a nearby glacier. I know that's one of your favorite things in the world, Amanda, is talking about the movement of glaciers.
Glacier topography, baby.
Weird fun fact about Amanda.
Yep.
And since it was abandoned, there have been reports of tombstones appearing and then vanishing on hiking trails, the sounds of children crying, and ghosts stealing workers' tools from their belts. When state government officials attempted to redevelop the area in the 1990s, the paranormal activity was so strong that they drove them to abandon the project.
I mean, the tools, you should definitely look around you at your work crew and if anybody, is in need / wanted to fuck with you. But especially, I think, in a state as sparsely populated as Alaska, I imagine that having spooky stuff happening around you is like even more heightened because of the atmosphere and the scarcity of other people. And just in general, like people in Alaska have to fend for themselves. And it's just an incredible, like, natural landscape.
Agreed, 100%. Moving on to Slaughterhouse Canyon, also known as Luana's Canyon. It is in Kingman, Arizona. Content warning for starvation and death. But the legend goes that in the 1800s, a family lived in a home at the bottom of the canyon, but food was scarce. And one day the father of the family went out to search for food, and in some stories, gold, because, you know, why not? And he never returned. The family slowly starved to death in the canyon, and the cries of anguish echoed against the canyon walls. And it is said to this day, you can still hear the echoing cries in the canyon.
Wow.
Spooky, spooky, spooky noise. In Eureka Springs, Arkansas, the 1886 Crescent Hotel has many ghostly residents.
Ah, we love a haunted hotel.
Oh, there's several on this list. Do not worry. The most well-known is Michael, who was a stonecutter who helped build the hotel and tragically died when he fell from the window in room 218, which is now, ironically, the hotel's most requested room. The ghostly pipe smoke of another ghost, who was the hotel's physician, can sometimes be smelled in the elevator. And other stories from hotel guests mention a disappearing pool of blood and hauntings in the property's old morgue, you know, the thing that most hotels had back in the day.
Wow. Julie, we talked about the spirit of Christmas before, but this really reminds me of our favorite ghostly, sexy Netflix movie.
I do really like that movie. It's terrible, but I love it so, so much. There's, of course, Amanda, a lot of California urban legends to choose from, including many that we told about in our old Hollywood urban legends episode. But I decided to focus on Elizabeth Lake, which, again, this is probably going to have some content warning for some drowning. It is said that the lake was created by the devil himself, and that if you swim deep enough into the lake, you can find a passageway to hell.
Okay.
Famously, it is also said to hold a horrifying lake monster that has been sighted there since the 1880s. It is about 50 feet long. It smells of rancid decay and has the neck of a giraffe, the head of a bulldog, and bat wings for some reason, which you don't see in lake monsters that often. The stories said that this terrible creature would scream in the night, and more than one farmer reported farm animals disappearing when they heard that screech.
I don't mind that mashup. That one's okay with me.
Yeah. So this might not be the scariest urban legend, but it is a wild one out of Manitou Springs, Colorado. So Emily Crawford came to Manitou Springs to seek help and treatment for tuberculosis, which is pretty common at the time. She got engaged to a man while there when she thought she was recovering, but was struck by another wave of the illness and died before she could get married. So her fiance and 11 other men carried her casket up the nearby Red Mountain, burying her there despite not having the proper permits, which you'll see why that's a problem in a bit. A flood occurred not long after, and her casket slid down into town in the resulting landslide. And over the years, various parts of Emma's body have been found, like her head and her arm and her leg.
What?
And strangely enough, now every year, the town hosts coffin races that commemorate her strange role in death and the town's history.
I mean, I love that. I think if you have something happening to you, you find a way to make it interesting or fun. Also, hey, vaccines are great. Get your flu shot.
Yeah, please do. Oh man, tuberculosis killed so many people.
Doesn't have to now. We don't have to have smallpox now. We don't have to have measles. It's really okay.
Get your vaccines. Anyway, so what about, Amanda, a whole cursed town? Dudley Town, formerly known as Owlsbury, Connecticut, which is a better name in my opinion, was founded in part by the Dudley family, which had a history of their family members meeting unfortunate ends. It was said that anyone that settled in the town would meet an untimely demise. The town was eventually fully abandoned, and those who are brave enough to visit the village, from paranormal investigators to very brave teens, have reported that there is a feeling of overwhelming dread that they experience upon stepping foot into town.
I get dread all the time when going various places, but if it was all concentrated in one place, I wouldn't go there.
Yeah, and if it's like, you know, people without a history of anxiety and other mental illness.
That must be frustrating.
Yeah, I wonder what that's like, huh?
I don't know.
Manny, you know how much we love seafaring urban legends here on the show, so my choice for Delaware is the Corpse Light. Not far from where my mother-in-law lives, actually, is Cape Henlopen, where sailors have reported seeing the beckoning call of a lighthouse ushering them to safety. However, the light predates any lighthouse in that area being built.
Ooh.
And has been seen despite the fact that the one that was eventually put there was deactivated in 1924. So the first victim of the Corpse Light was said to be the ship the Devonshireman on Christmas Day 1655, and it is said that the same ship can be seen heading towards the rocky shores on foggy days.
Oh my god, brutal.
Yes, I love that one. Love a good sailor myth.
Will somebody please give me a tour of a lighthouse? Just, I want one.
There's like plenty of bed and breakfasts where you can just like stay in a lighthouse overnight, Amanda. We could do that.
Once that's possible again, that is an absolute definite yes.
Absolutely. Great.
We got Scotland. We got Buy My Irish Castle. We got lighthouse tours.
Great. Love it. Now, there are a lot of Florida urban legends to choose from, and a lot of them are super depressing or stuff we've covered on the show before, like the Devil's Chair in Casadega and the Skunk Ape. So I'm picking one of my favorites, which is the fact that Lakeview Cemetery in Sanford, Florida is haunted by a horse.
Really? What a nice change.
His name is Bob. He's the only non-human buried in this cemetery, and he was the horse for the local funeral home before they had cars and stuff like that.
Bob.
His grave is constantly covered in flowers that rumors say show up out of nowhere. And if you listen carefully at the grave, you might hear the clip-clop of hooves.
Oh, bless.
There is a lake north of Atlanta, Georgia, Amanda, called Lake Lanier, which has a long history of tragedy despite being a man-made lake. Again, content warning for drowning. Many bodies have been found in the lake, which is disproportionately high with the number of accidents and drownings. In the 80s, a construction crew found the skeleton of a missing woman who disappeared in 1958, found in her car at the bottom of the lake. So 30 years later.
Oh my God. Brutal.
The woman is said to haunt the shores since the discovery of the body. And on a less tragic, more cryptid note, there are stories of a demonic catfish that lurks in the depths of Lake Lanier, large enough to swallow a dog or drag a swimmer down to the bottom, never to return again.
Fuck yeah, man. Fuck yeah. Yeah. Love it. I bet catfishes could grow pretty much big enough to be that. And if there are any ichthyologists out there, I would love to hear from you.
Well, if you remember the photo I sent you when we were talking about our Loch Ness episode for Myth Movie Night, that was a catfish.
Yeah. Terrible. I mean, lovely. Great.
Beautiful fish. Wow. But also could swallow me whole, probably.
Terrifying and worth protecting, like most of nature.
Yes. So we talked a lot about some of Hawaii's more interesting folktales when we had Kamu on earlier this year, but one of the ones that we didn't discuss is tied to Hawaii's mythology. So it's said that you shouldn't carry pork over the Pali Highway, which is also known as Route 61, if you're ever in Oahu. If you insist on taking your snack or dinner with you, your car will stall out until you finally give up and throw the food away, in which case the car will just start right back up. And the origin is actually really interesting. So Pele, who we talked about in her own episode, had this rocky romantic relationship with the hogman slash demigod named Kamapuaa. And as a result, Pele will not allow pork to pass over this like, you know, kind of line in the island.
Fucking incredible. I love it. We all have to be good bros for Pele and not mention the name, smell, or flesh of her ex around her. Like, that's just a nice thing to do for your friends.
I get it, you know? And another good argument for sourcing your food locally.
Hell yeah.
So at the Massacre Rocks in Pocatello, Idaho, if you sit by the river...
I have a guess.
Well, if you sit by the river, you might hear the cries of babies. Again, content warning for child death, but it was said that in times of famine, mothers would drown their children rather than watching them starve to death. However, it is said that rather than, you know, these babies haunting the area, the children actually grew gills and fins and now live as river spirits in the waters. And it is said that they will attempt to lure women who remind them of their mothers into the river to exact revenge on them.
Less cute, but overall, pretty good adaptation of a brutal, historical circumstance.
Yes. So from Villa Park, a suburb in the west of Chicago, there is an old mansion and estate that belonged to a man named Francis S. Peabody. So Mr. Peabody was a rich man and enjoyed hosting hunts with his friends, and on one such hunt went missing. His body was found several hours later, apparently having died suddenly, which is not the spookiness of the story, but rather the fact
Poirot
that...
Poirot is on the case.
So he was interred on the grounds of his estate, some saying that he was buried with all of his gold, which is fascinating, but others saying, and this is my favorite part, that his body was basically pickled and is floating in oil in a see-through casket.
Oh my God.
So his estate was sold to an order of Franciscan friars shortly after his death, and for generations, Chicago youths have been attempting to find the casket on the grounds to see his pickled body in, only to be chased away by monks.
Chicago, I am so disappointed it has taken us this long to hear about this myth. That is incredible. I didn't see the monks coming. I love the idea of a casket. I have such strong Knives Out vibes. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
It's very good. Someone from Chicago who has tried to sneak onto those grounds, please let us know.
Yes, please poll your older siblings and relatives. So good.
In Brazil, Indiana, there is a cemetery known as the Hundred Steps Cemetery. Not much is known about the cemetery or when it was founded, but there are gravestones that date back to the 1860s. It is said that if you visit the cemetery at midnight, you can climb the steps of the cemetery, counting out each step. When you reach the 100th step, you will see the ghost of an undertaker who will then show you the image of your own death.
Whoa, intense.
You then must turn and go back down the steps, counting as you go along the way. And if you count the same number of steps on the way down as the way up, you will not die in the way that the ghost will show you. But if you count a different number, that death will be your fate.
There's no winning in this scenario. Just don't.
Some people have tried to, get around this myth by just avoiding the steps altogether and kind of just like trudging up the hill. But it is said that you anger the spirit by doing that and you get like shoved to the ground by an unseen force.
Or, you know, trying to climb up a hill that has steps, not on the steps.
At midnight, you know, not great. Speaking of cemeteries, in the Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City, there is a statue that stands out among the graves. It is an angel at about 8 feet tall and is pitch black in color. It watches over the Feldevert family plot. And at one point, the statue was this gorgeous golden monument. But when each of the members of the family died tragically, the statue began turning black, starting with the eyes and making its way all over the statue until the entire thing was pitch black.
Wow. I mean, or people were stealing the gold leaf, but either way, I think it's really fun.
That could be true. Legends say that if you were to kiss the angel, you would instantly die. And locals say that the mother, Teresa Feldevert, was a witch who cursed the statue to protect her family even after death.
I love that.
If we're talking about Kansas, Amanda, we have to talk about Stoll Cemetery. In 1974, rumors of satanic influence and a gateway to hell in the cemetery were popularized after an article was published saying that the devil came to Stoll every Halloween and spring equinox. They say that one of the seven gates of hell is located in the cemetery, and there is even tell that when the Pope was visiting Colorado during the 1990s, he redirected his plane so that their flight path would not cross over Stoll, Kansas.
That is a wonderful rumor. I bet it wasn't the Pope that did that, but for, you know, quote, flyover country, I think that is a really fun kind of diss.
I love that. Local students will often journey to the cemetery on Halloween or the equinox to, quote, see the devil, so much so that the local government has made it a crime to be in the cemetery after it closes with a fine of up to $1,000 and up to 6 months in jail. That's how seriously they take it. They're just like, come on, kids,
stay in school.
Stay in school. Don't do this. I picked the Kentucky urban legend solely because of its name, which is the Pope Lick Monster.
Incredible.
From the Pope Lick Creek in Louisville, Kentucky, this creature is part man, part goat, part sheep. He's said to lurk underneath a railroad bridge and uses a sort of hypnosis or mind control to lure people onto the train tracks to their death. Other legends say that it has a much more direct approach where it attacks people with an axe. I think that one, you know, a little bit different flavors there. The origins of the creature are debated, but my favorite is that the monster is a reincarnated form of a farmer who sacrificed goats for satanic powers and was brought back to life by Satan himself in this goatman form.
Incredible.
They'd love, you know, urban legends love a Satan story. They really do.
Yeah, I think maybe a lot of this came about during kind of satanic panic type timeline, and especially the ones that are at least being circulated now, sort of in the living memory.
Yes, absolutely. Though a lot of them predate, usually that's late true. 1800s to 1920s. It depends on the state, really, and, you know, how old and how long people have been colonizing there. So Louisiana is another state with a lot of great urban legends, but one of my favorites is the Devil Man of Algiers.
Oh.
In 1938, there are a few newspaper reports of a man with long black horns, pink ears shaped like stars, and cartoonishly huge eyes that was harassing couples as they walked through town. It was said that he could appear in a moment and disappear just as quickly. And while he never killed anyone, he terrorized the town for a few weeks, and those who met him were said to see their life flash before their eyes before he disappeared again in a blink.
Intense.
Yes. Luckily, he didn't kill anyone, though, so that's a plus. In another haunted tomb, it is said that the founder of Bucksport, Maine, Colonel Jonathan Buck, was responsible for burning a witch early on in the town's founding. During the fire, it was said that the woman's leg rolled out of the flames, and now Jonathan Buck's gravestone has this mysterious stain that is shaped like a woman's leg.
I mean, lots of things are leg-shaped, Julia.
I saw a picture, though. It does kind of look like the opposite of Italy, where it looks like a boot, but it's facing the other way.
I mean, that could be lots of things.
Okay, but Amanda, despite the fact that many have attempted to scrub away the tombstone stain, it always remains. And even after the monument was replaced twice, the stain continues to appear. So it's said that the witch marked Buck for his crimes even in death.
I think it's so funny. I'm just picturing a bunch of people in like old-timey clothing staring at a grave and someone being like, by Jove, it's a leg.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to send you the picture because it kind of does look like a leg.
I take it back. It's leg-shaped.
See, it is leg-shaped. I wasn't lying.
It's leg-shaped.
It's very leg-shaped.
Yeah. It's also centered under the name Buck, which I just think is very good.
Okay, Amanda, the next one we're going to talk about is the Goat Man of Maryland, which is probably the most famous of Maryland's urban legends, and for good reason. Another half-man, half-goat similar to our friend the Popelick Monster. The Goat Man is said to have once been a scientist working at the Beltsville Agricultural Research Center, experimenting on, you guessed it, goats. One of his experiments backfired, turning him into the creature he is now. It is said that he roams the back roads of Beltsville, attacking cars with an axe. They just love a half man, half goat who's got an axe, huh?
Apparently.
Other stories that seem to predate this one include one where the Goat Man is simply an old hermit living on his own, patrolling Fletchertown Road to keep people away from his land.
Sure.
The history of Hoosac Tunnel in Massachusetts is a unfortunately bloody one. Over the course of the 24 years it took to construct, over 200 people died, earning it the name the Bloody Pit.
My God.
One of the more tragic events was in 1867, where 13 miners were trapped inside the tunnel due to an explosion. While the other workers assumed that they were killed in the blast, it was discovered later that they had actually survived, but ended up dying from poisonous gas inhalation in the tunnel. It is said that those 13 miners now haunt the tunnel, and moaning can be heard when you travel through it.
That sounds very scary.
In Lake Michigan, the ship Le Griffon, built in 1679, disappeared on its voyage. The ship and crew were never heard from again, and it was assumed that it was lost in a violent storm, though others suspect that fur traders might have attacked and burned the ship. Now, many people have attempted to find the shipwreck of Le Griffon, making it the like holy grail of shipwrecks in Lake Michigan. And some say that you will see the ghostly visage of Le Griffon sailing across Lake Michigan on some nights.
I love a ghost ship.
I do too. Speaking of, you know, remote islands and stuff like that, on Gray Cloud Island in Minnesota, only 300 people live there, and at least one of its residents is spectral in nature.
Ooh.
While there are lots of reports of paranormal activity on the island, the most intriguing story to me is one of a white pickup truck that will chase people across the island. They say that the truck will appear and disappear in a moment, or that when people look in their rearview mirror at the approaching truck, they cannot see a driver. Stories say that the truck only stalks those who are not from the island, wanting the quote-unquote trespassers off their island.
That would be very scary. See a truck coming at you.
Very, very scary. I feel like there's plenty of, you know, horror movies set in kind of like the backwoods of nowhere, where it's like they're nearly run off the road by a big truck and stuff like that. And that starts the like chain of events that lead to everyone getting murdered in a murder house.
Yeah.
Speaking of islands, Mississippi's most famous legend is the Ghost of Deer Island, and it has pirates in it.
Hell yeah. The closer an urban legend hues to Scooby-Doo plots I'm fond of, the more I'm here for it.
Oh, this one seems like it's straight out of a Scooby-Doo episode. So according to the stories, a ship sailed to the island, buried their treasure there, and either there was a betrayal or some kind of curse, but the pirates beheaded one of their crewmen to watch over the treasure. And then the story picks back up in the 1920s, where two men heard rustling on the island and thought it was like boars, but then they went to investigate, only to find a headless skeleton that then chased them off as they barely managed to get onto their boat and get away from the island.
Oh my gosh.
Headless skeleton. Defending treasure. That is just Scooby-Doo right off the bat.
It really is. And then if Scoob, like, I don't know, like, eats a bunch of Scooby snacks and then, like, fires them, like, bullets at the skeleton, he can break all into bones.
I like that one. That's very good. So perhaps the cutest name for an urban legend, Momo, is a monster out of Missouri that is similar to Bigfoot. First spotted in 1971, the creature has a huge pumpkin-shaped head with hair like a shag carpet. You can tell it was out of the 70s from the fact that that's how it's described.
I'm sure one day the millennial aesthetic, you know, of like minimalist pink natural wood plants is going to seem just as dated. But for now, 70s coming back, man.
Yeah, we might all have shag carpets again. So Momo is at least 7 feet tall with thick black hair and smelled terrible, even from the distance that Joan Mills and Mary Ryan saw it from. Supposedly, there was also a report in 1868 that Momo attempted to abduct a 4-year-old boy, but I personally couldn't find any evidence that that was a legit story, so there we are. Now, Amanda, we're going to take a quick refill, and then we're going to get right back into the creepy cool urban legend action.
Cannot wait.
Amanda, I was recently playing some D&D at my home game, you know, virtually because all of our players are spread out and also we're quarantining. And someone complimented my hair in the middle of the game, just being like, oh, by the way, I roll for initiative, but also, Julie, your hair looks really good. And I was like, oh, well, thank you. It's because I've been using Function of Beauty.
Classic. I love it.
And Function of Beauty, if you haven't heard about it on our show before, is hair care that is formulated specifically for you. No matter what your hair type is, they can create a shampoo, a conditioner, treatments that fit your unique needs. How unique, you're probably asking me. Function of Beauty has over 54 trillion possible ingredient combinations to make your formula as unique as you are as a person. So like, just I go for something to decrease my frizz, but also get my hair nice and wavy and stop breakage at the end so I don't have those split ends. And I use their smoothing treatment, which I really, really like.
I use the body wash. And so I and my bathroom smell like a gentle cloud of eucalyptus at all times. It's delightful.
Beautiful. I smell like roses all the time. I love it. So yay. First, all you have to do is take a quick but thorough quiz to tell them about your hair. Then their team determines what the right blend of ingredients are, and they bottle your custom formula to order. You're not getting someone else's order. You're getting something specifically made for you. And then they deliver your personalized formula right to your door in a very cute customized bottle with like a color that you like and a fragrance that you like. Amanda goes eucalyptus. I go rose. And all of their formulas are vegan and cruelty free. They never use sulfates or parabens or any other harmful ingredients. So not only are they the first ever custom hair care brand, it's the internet's top rated customized hair care brand with over 40,000 real 5-star reviews and counting, mine included. So what are you waiting for? You can go to functionofbeauty.com/spirits to take your 4-part hair profile quiz and save 20% on your first order.
That's functionofbeauty.com/spirits for 20% off and to let them know you heard about it from our show.
functionofbeauty.com/spirits.
We are also sponsored this week by BetterHelp, and this is how I have been getting therapy during all of these times. If there is something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, this is a wonderful way to get matched with a licensed professional therapist who you can talk to on your schedule, on your own time, and from home. They also have a broad range of expertise available, whether that is a cultural competency or LGBT issues, or their specific sort of therapeutic expertise for something specific that you want to get done. They are more affordable than traditional offline counseling and even offer financial aid, which I think is fantastic. And my favorite part is that you can log in anytime to send a message to your counselor. There's even a little journal function. So if, like me, you enjoy homework and want your counselor and your therapist to assign you to, write something down every day or like keep an eye out for this or that or make a list to discuss next time, it's really, really easy to get that done and to share that info with your therapist if you want to. And because BetterHelp wants you to have a great therapeutic match, they make it easy and free to change counselors if you need to, which hopefully you don't. But if you do, it is such a wonderful feature to be able to do that without like completely starting over, starting to pay somebody new, going through your insurance company again. Like, we all know healthcare is bad, and this is definitely the way it should be. So go to betterhelp.com/spirits to join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. They are even giving a special offer for Spirits listeners to get 10% off your first month if you sign up at betterhelp.com/spirits. And once more, that's betterhelp.com/spirits for 10% off your first month.
Amanda, we cut the cord in my household a long time ago because cable's just too expensive. But also, like, there's stuff that I want to watch live on TV. But thankfully, I signed up for FuboTV and I'm saving so much money. Cable was like over $200. FuboTV is $65 a month to watch the same channels, and I don't have to pay for DVR or some guy to come to my house super late and not tell me and also cancel a million times. Nope, I just have to sign up for Fubo.
You mean you don't like when the cable company gives you a window, like a 12-hour long window at some point during the week to come and look at your wall and be like, yep, it's on, and then leave and charge you $500?
Yeah, Fubo Fubo TV, it has over 100 channels. They have cloud DVR. There's no hidden fees. And you can stream shows on your TV or any other smart device. So if I'm working, I can have like, you know, something on in the background. With Fubo TV, you'll have shows that you don't want to miss, like This Is Us or The Bachelor or The Masked Singer. The Masked Singer reveal a couple of weeks ago was absolutely wild, but that's another story for another time.
Or House Hunters, Julia, where you can watch people be like, I don't like the paint color, bye.
You're like, come on, you can just repaint it. It's okay. I know it's making the room seem small, but once you paint it a lighter color, it'll be fine.
I've really been enjoying watching HGTV during my daily pandemic baths, and now you can too with Fubo TV.
So right now, Fubo TV is offering our listeners the 7-day free trial and 15% off your first month by going to FuboTV.com/spirit. There are no contracts and you can cancel at any time. So go to FuboTV.com/spirits for 15% off your first month and a 7-day free trial.
Listen, no reason you shouldn't sign up for the 7-day free trial and see if you like it, watch some stuff, and figure out if this is a good fit for you. So that's FuboTV.com/spirits. And now let's get back to the show.
All right, Amanda, we are back at it. I have picked up one of my favorite local pumpkin ales from Montauk Brewery. I recommend all of our listeners pick up a nice pumpkin ale or pumpkin beer from wherever they're listening from, because 'tis the season, you know?
Absolutely. If you would like to get into beer and don't know how, get like a sampler pack. Go to the grocery store or your local craft beer store, or talk to a friendly seeming, you know, employee at one of those locations or at a bar, and just be like, hey, I want to try a bunch of stuff. Like, can you help me? And doing a kind of a sampler 6-pack or 2 6-packs to bring to a party is a really fun way to, you know, try different beers and also to support local breweries.
Absolutely. And you should be supporting your local breweries. So many of these cool states that we're talking about have breweries in them, and you can find them easily online.
Very cool.
So, Amanda, one of my favorite types of urban legends is ones that like sound familiar, but with a twist. So in Montana, there's the story of the hitchhiker of Black Horse Lake. So on an empty stretch of highway, there is a not so spectral body of a hitchhiker that is said to slam into the windshield of cars.
Oh, God.
And if you stop to help the person that you've hit, you'll find that there's no one there, and that there's actually no damage to your car whatsoever.
Wow.
However, the legend goes that this spirit is trapped in their own like personal hell, where he must repeat the moment of his death night after night.
Does something worse happen if you don't stop?
No, I think it's the assumption that if you're going to hit a person, you're probably a good person and going to stop to check to see if you've, you know,
hopefully
done something terrible. You know, I'm sure there are people out there who wouldn't, and those people deserve to be in their own personal hell. You know what? I'm going to put my own twist on the story now, Amanda.
Yeah.
If you don't stop to check on that person,
you're the next one.
You're the next victim. There it
yes.
is.
Yes.
So a lot of sources agree that when it comes to Nebraska, you gotta talk about Centennial Hall. So it is the oldest standing high school building in all of Nebraska, built in 1897, and it is now a museum, but it is said to have all sorts of paranormal phenomena. The most well-known tragedy tied to the hauntings was of a girl who died in 1944, who was killed because her clarinet reed was poisoned.
Wow, what a good way to poison someone. I mean, don't poison someone, but if you're going to read a novel in which someone fictional is poisoned, that's amazing.
That is a very good way of doing it. And now we've inspired a bunch of murder mystery novelists to kill their victims that way. Excellent job, guys. So today, people report being nauseous when they enter the room in which she died, and hearing voices, lights flickering, and strangely, music coming from the music room, despite no instruments remaining.
Spectral tunes. Very good.
Nevada. Home to Area 51. So many murders in the desert, etc., etc. But did you know that one of their most famous legends is in fact the story of a mermaid?
Really?
Yes. The Mermaid of Pyramid Lake is held responsible for many things, including a surprisingly large number of fishermen who go missing out on the lake. In the story, the mermaid was said to have fallen in love with a man that was from one of the local indigenous tribes, the Paiute, but the mermaid was shunned and the union was disapproved of, so she was said to have been banished and came to settle in Pyramid Lake, and now exacts her revenge on those in love who come to her shores.
Very good. Water spirits all the way.
Now, Amanda, let's talk about the devil monkeys of Danville, New Hampshire.
Wow. Okay.
So stories disagree whether or not it's one monkey or several monkeys, but it's said that these monkeys are demonic in nature with horrifying claws and knife-like teeth. While they're usually dismissed as rumors, in 2001, the chief of the fire department claimed to have seen one of these creatures, which I take as like, you know, a member of society, a member of like the council, you know, seeing one of these is kind of a big deal. It is said that when you listen on quiet nights in Danville, you can hear a haunting, howling noise on the wind, and that is the devil monkey come back to terrorize the town, as they're said to have, you know, wandered off since their last sightings into the White Mountains.
Wow, such a small state, such a big legend.
Now, Amanda, the Jersey Devil would be an easy pick for New Jersey, but is it really the scariest of the Jersey urban legends? I personally prefer the Parkway Phantom, who lurks around exit 82.
Okay.
So ever since the parkway was completed in 1955, generations of drivers have reported seeing someone trying to cross the road, waving his arms to get attention of oncoming traffic. He is said to be wearing a long top coat belted at the waist and is very tall. If you stop to help him, he will be gone by the time you pull over. And it is said that he is the ghost of a pedestrian who was hit, but the paramedics were unable to find his body. So the stories go on to say that he is trying to flag someone down in order to help him, and he's stuck in this constant loop again.
Wow.
That's fascinating, right? I love it. So Roswell would also be very easy to do in New Mexico, as it's one of the most famous legends, but I prefer the story of the Territorns, which are a thought to be extinct North American bird of prey that live in the area of New Mexico, supposedly. They had a wingspan of about 12 and a half feet, and rumor has it that they still take flight over areas like Las Cruces, looking like giant vultures or condors, and reports date back to the 1800s and have been made recently as well.
That's awesome.
You know, I feel like, you know, vultures on their own flying over the desert, creepy. Giant vultures flying over you as you're driving down the desert highway, extremely creepy. Very bad.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it before, but that kind of like loss of perspective when you're driving on a long stretch of straight road, I imagine would make it much, much scarier when you look up and you're like, oh, wait, shit, those birds are really big.
Yeah, no, I imagine too, probably some of the rumors are like, you know, when something is closer to the sun, it makes a bigger shadow. So like,
yeah,
it probably looks bigger than it actually is, but I think it's really cool. So for New York, Amanda, there are plenty to choose from, but I decided to do the one that hits closest to home for us, which is the Montauk Project.
Oh, Julia, my mom has been texting me on and off for 5 years to cover the Montauk Project on Spirits. Thank you.
You're welcome. So conspiracy theorists believe that a series of U.S. government projects that were developing anything from time travel to gene splicing were happening at Camp Hero in Montauk, New York. Stories began circulating in the early 1980s, perpetuated by a UFO researcher named Jacques Vallée, when a strange creature was found washed up on the shores of Montauk, nicknamed the Montauk Monster in 2008. The creature was also tied to the Montauk Project as well. There's still debate as to whether the Montauk Monster was like a weird creature or not, but most scientists agree that it was a raccoon that, you know, was decayed and lost its upper jaw, but it's still really creepy. If you Google Montauk Monster, it's a spooky looking thing.
Yeah. And among lifeguards and surfers and other folks who, you know, either do or choose not to go around there, it's definitely like a legend that kind of everybody knows.
Yeah. In Chatham County, North Carolina, there is a 40-foot circle, perfect in size and circumference, that it seems as though nothing can grow in it. No vegetation, nothing. Any attempts to plant something in that circle is doomed to fail, and anything left in that circle for more than a few moments is said to disappear.
How big is it?
40 feet.
Jeez.
Stories from locals say that Satan walks this circle nightly, pacing throughout the night, and this is why nothing good or living can stay there for long.
I dig it.
It wouldn't be an urban legend-centric episode if there wasn't at least one woman dying tragically, so content warning for that. And North Dakota delivers. In Tetrault Woods, you can visit White Lady Lane, where the story goes that a woman died. The story differs as to why. Some say it was by a jealous lover when the woman's parents forbade forbade them from marrying. Another says that it was that she gave birth out of wedlock and died by suicide because her parents turned on her. Either way, a white-clad ghost of a woman is said to wander White Lady Lane on dark evenings, which just named on point, I feel like.
For sure.
Amanda, Ohio has melon heads.
Wow. Okay. I feel like we should call editor Eric to hold him to account, but let's hear it.
So we've talked about the Loveland Frogmen. We've talked about Gore Orphanage, but I just keep coming back to the melon heads. They were said to be children with giant heads the size of melons, as you would imagine, and razor sharp teeth. They haunt the woods of Kirkland, Ohio, and some say that they were the result of some scientific experimentation. Either way, they are said to scurry like animals and attack in groups, going for your face with their razor sharp teeth.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Would be a bad way to go.
Yeah. Would not be fun, really. If you've ever watched The Shining, the Skirvin Hotel in Oklahoma may not be too unfamiliar to you. It is a luxury hotel with plenty of guests that have checked in, but never checked out.
No.
Crying babies in the room next to you when the room was never actually booked, mysterious hands against shower doors when you're alone in your room, and the ghost of the original owner's mistress who wanders the halls with a baby carriage. Apparently, this hotel is so infamously haunted that Nick Young of the LA Lakers refused to stay there, and that and the bedbugs.
I mean, both are pretty good reasons to choose somewhere
different. Pretty good reasons, yeah. Just like the idea of like a basketball player being like, nah, that hotel's too haunted. I'm not going to stay there. Not again.
Listen, if you have choices, take your choices. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love a more modern urban legend, as anyone who listens to the show knows, and Portland, Oregon delivers with the story of Polybius, an urban legend about a 1980s arcade game that may or may not have existed.
Oh, I've read about this.
Yes. The story goes that the arcade game was a crowdsourced government experiment based in Portland, where playing the game could cause psychoactive instances in the players, and those who played the game would eventually be visited by shady government figures, the good old men in black, who would then sometimes disappear people, never to be heard from again.
I think if you're like a long read article or like a long Reddit post, but if you search around, there are some very good kind of details about this.
There is a Radiotopia podcast that they kind of didn't tell people it was fiction about this.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Back when that was what all podcasts did, that was very funny.
Yes. So you can listen to that. It is fake, but it is something you can Google and find yourself. It is entertaining, but it is not the truth. Anyway.
Yeah.
So this one feels a little bit out of a Hey Arnold episode. I don't know if that's a reference that you would get, Amanda.
I watched Hey Arnold.
Okay.
I know that Stoop Kid's Afraid to Leave the Stoop.
Okay. But in Philadelphia, there is the urban legend of a bus that doesn't have an end destination. It is said that you can only get on the bus if you are at your lowest moments in life looking for an escape. And once you feel as though you're able to face the world again, it's only then that the bus will stop and let you off. So it's said that people...
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, it's said that people lose a sense of time when they get on the bus, and that despite how long it feels, you will get off the bus at almost the exact moment in which you got on it.
I mean, some extra time to just have like contemplation, recovery, etc. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a great service.
I know how much you absolutely adore liminal spaces, so I picked that one just for you.
You're so kind to me. Thank you.
On the Devil's Foot Rock in North Kingstown, it is said that Satan himself stepped onto Rhode Island. While he was there, he met a newly married bride and attempted to steal her away back down to hell. She managed to escape, but in the process, the devil's fiery footsteps burned themselves into the granite, which can still be seen to this day.
Very good.
It's a good one. It's a classic, I feel like.
Yeah, the like urban legend leaving its mark on the topography is lovely.
South Carolina has the Gray Man, who can be found on the coast of Paulways Island. And unlike most of the spirits in this episode, he's here to help. He's said to warn residents about severe storms and hurricanes before they hit the area and before, you know, we all had weather apps on our phones. He was said to be a young man who is traveling to Charleston to visit his fiance, but ended up drowning on the shores of Pawleys Island because of a storm. The last major spotting of the Gray Man was back in 2018, right before Hurricane Florence hit.
That sounds like a very good service.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your service, Gray Man. Easton Castle in Aberdeen, South Dakota was built in the late 1800s, and the housekeeper of said home was Leslie Gage, who is the inspiration behind the Wizard of Oz's Dorothy, and she's said to haunt the third floor. However, that is not Easton Castle's only claim to fame. The ghost of the young son of the Eastons is also said to haunt the old house, creating enough paranormal disturbance to drive people out of his home.
This one's dedicated to P.J. Scott Blankenship and Hit the Bricks.
Fun fact, Leslie Gage was L. Frank Baum's niece, so that's how he got the inspiration for Dorothy. Now, Amanda, we've got a bathroom ghost in Tennessee, which is one of our favorite types.
Oh, fuck yeah.
At Pine Haven School in Jamestown, now abandoned, it is said that the ghost of a young boy who was accidentally killed by bullies on the school grounds haunts the upstairs bathroom. The boys, afraid of what would happen if they were caught, you know, having accidentally killed a boy, buried his body beneath the floorboards, and it is said that he haunts the bathroom, and if you look in the mirror, you will see him behind you.
Very creepy. I hate a mirror illusion, and don't bully.
I agree. In terms of ominous names, the Candy Lady of rural Texas is definitely up there.
Oh no!
In the early 1900s, several children went missing and it was blamed on the mysterious Candy Lady. She was said to leave candy in children's windows in order to lure them outside and then would snatch them up. In some stories, she left notes promising them more candy if they would meet her elsewhere. There is a second part of the story that comes from the idea that a farmer apparently found a bunch of rotten teeth on his farm, like in a pile, and then came across the body of a boy who had his pockets full of candy.
No.
You're just shaking your head a lot there.
Less teeth, please. If you've listened to my first episode of Meddling Adults, you will know we don't like teeth. Too many teeth.
So there is some speculation that say that there might be some truth to this story and that the legend of the Candy Lady may be tied to a woman named Clara Crane. Ooh. Spooky.
Wow.
Spooky stuff.
Spooky alliterative name.
Ooh, yes. But not, and works with candy. Candy Clara.
True.
Candy Clara Crane. Anyway, it's hard to say. It's a tongue twister.
Clara Crane's candies.
Personally, I love a state or national park, but going with our theme that a lot of them are haunted, it's no surprise that Escalante Petrified Forest State Park in Utah is on our list. Those who steal chunks of petrified wood from the forest have had terrible things befall them once they return home. The park apparently receives mail nearly every day of people attempting to return them after accidents or bad luck starts happening to them, and it has become so much of a phenomenon that the park displays the letters as part of one of their exhibits.
That's a very good deterrent.
It is. I love it. I am fully fascinated with this urban legend out of Vermont, which comes from a diary that was published in the late 1800s. So the legend states that poor families who were concerned about not being able to feed their entire families during the winter would take the eldest member of the family and freeze them and bury them out in the snow. And then by the time spring rolled around, the elder member of the family would then be thawed out and just resume their lives. Totally chill, for lack of a better phrase.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. All people can talk about from Virginia is the Bunny Man, and we've talked about him so many times, but honestly, there isn't much that can beat him. Tied to the Bunny Man Bridge, a man wearing a rabbit costume is said to attack people with an axe, usually lovers or teens that dare trespass onto his territory. The first reported sighting was by Robert Bennett and his fiance on October 19th, 1970, with the second reported sighting only 10 days later. Many versions of the story now tie the Bunny Man to Halloween. It is said that if he is a spirit, he comes out of his place of resting during this time to haunt the bridge.
I mean, it's the best time, I think, to walk around unnoticed.
There you go. Now, Amanda, sure, Washington State has Bigfoot, but what about the 13 steps to hell?
I'd love to know about them. Step one, gluttony. Step two, envy.
That's seven. What are the others?
Not editing your podcast. Europe not serving ice. Racism. Mm-hmm. Transphobia. Mm-hmm. Classism. What else? Not voting if you are an eligible voter in the U.S.
Great.
This November.
Okay, great. But in Maltby Cemetery, there is a subterranean tomb that one must take 13 steps down to enter. It is said that if you are living and step down the steps, you might get a glimpse of hell itself.
If you're living... But if you're a spirit, don't worry about it.
You're already probably there. It's fine. So unfortunately, though the cemetery was built in 1901, the stairs themselves have been covered in concrete in recent years and are no longer accessible. But it doesn't stop people from going there and trying to see what's up.
Yeah. And until, you know, 20 years from now, somebody rips out that concrete and is like, oh, nice steps. Let's refurbish them. Oh, no.
Oh, no. So I could phone it in, Amanda, and just yell about Mothman at you now that we've hit West Virginia, but y'all deserve something fresh. So how about the Ogwa, a gigantic water monster inhabiting the Monongahela River that resembles a giant snapping turtle? Estimates say that it weighs 500 pounds and its tail is 15 feet alone. Unlike the turtle it resembles, it can move fast enough to capture deer on land, according to some reports.
Good God. I'm also Googling snapping turtles because I didn't realize their tails were that long, like compared to the body.
This one in particular, yeah.
They do. They have spiny tails.
This always reminds me of the reptile house at the Bronx Zoo. They used to have this absolutely giant, and I'm talking about like really, really big snapping turtle in like one of the last rooms of the exhibit. And it was one of my favorite things in the world because it was so big and so old and so cute. I feel like we've talked about the Hodag of Rylander before, but I just love him a whole bunch. This Wisconsin legend dates back to at least 1928, if not earlier, and is said to be a dog-sized creature with the head of a frog, long fangs or tusks, and a back like a stegosaurus. While it has a frightening appearance and a terrible smell, it is not often reported as doing harm to people. The Hodag story spread far and wide, so much so that the Smithsonian sent a reporter to investigate the veracity of the reports, especially when a man named Eugene Shepard claimed to have caught and killed it and was displaying the creature for a couple of cents per viewing. I feel like probably a nickel at that time. That feels right. Like a nickel. And finally, Wyoming leaves us with a classic folktale, the Death Ship of the Platte River.
All right.
Rising from the mist every now and again, the phantom ship will disappear as quickly as it appears in the fog. If you're able to get a close look, you'll see that its crew is entirely covered in frost, huddling together to keep warm, but also around a piece of canvas that is covering something.
Oh.
So if you're able to see the ship, it is said to foreshadow death, that a corpse will be revealed from underneath the canvas on the decks, resembling either the witness or somebody they love.
Oh.
And sightings date back to 1862 and have sporadically continued to this day.
That is very creepy. I love that twist on the ghost ship.
I love it. It's, you know, foreshadowing death. It's a ghost ship. There's like, you can see how the crew died. It's like so detailed and beautiful and a great way to end our urban legends list here.
Fantastic. Julia, thank you for this all-encompassing tour. I think it is a wonderful way to spend one of our precious spooky Wednesdays in October that we have each year.
Thank you. And I hope that it will also inspire people to send in their favorite urban legends from their home states. I think that you guys probably have a lot of stuff that I didn't mention, and I would love to hear about it.
Yeah, we love to group stories thematically when we can. So if you want to put like my state urban legend or the name of your state in the subject line, maybe we can do a little roundup in the future.
Yeah, and it will make it easier if we come and visit your home state once we can start doing live shows again in person to tell your stories.
Heck yeah. Well, Julia, thank you again. And everybody, whether you glimpse a ghost vulture, ghost ship, ghost in a cemetery, ghost anywhere else, don't worry. Just remember.
Stay creepy.
Stay cool.
Ghost horse.
Thanks again to our sponsors. At functionofbeauty.com/spirits, you can save 20% off your first order of custom hair care. At betterhelp.com/spirits, you can get 10% off your first month of secure online counseling. And at fubotv.com/spirits, you can get 15% off and sign up for your 7-day free trial. Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin McLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us at Spirits Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. We also have all of our episode transcripts, guest appearances, and merch on our website, as well as a form to send us your urban legends at spiritspodcast.com.
Join our member community on Patreon, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Just $1 gets you access to audio extras with so much more available too. Recipe cards, director's commentaries, exclusive merch, and real physical gifts.
We are a founding member of Multitude, a collective of independent audio professionals. If you like Spirits, you will love the other shows that live on our website at multitude.productions.
And above all else, if you liked what you heard today, please share us with your friends. That is the very best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.